Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Beyond Sleep Training Podcast, a podcast dedicated to sharing real tales of how people have managed sleep in their family outside of sleep training culture. Because sleep looks different with a baby in the house. And because every family is different, there is no one-size-fits-all approach to take. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is being recorded, the Kalkadoon people. I pay my respects to the elders of this nation and the many other nations our guests reside in from the past, present and emerging. We honour Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and the unique cultural and spiritual relationships to the land, water and seas, as well as their rich contributions to society, including the birthing and nurturing of children. Welcome back to the Beyond Sleep Training Podcast. I'm your host, Carly Grubb, and with me today again is Bashi Kumar Hazard. Bashi joined us on last week's episode where we got to hear a little bit about how life looked when she welcomed her first baby, also how life would have looked if she was actually mothering her babes where a large part of her family is in Malaysia. And then we also heard about welcoming her second baby, who turns out had extensive health issues that went undiagnosed for a very long time. And Bashi actually credits co-sleeping with potentially saving her life around those. So welcome back, Bashi.
Thank you for having me again. Pleasure to be here.
Now, for anyone who hasn't listened to that episode, I'd strongly encourage you to go back and have a listen, because it will make a whole lot more sense for what we're about to talk about today. So when we finished that episode, Bashi, we just heard that your little girl had had her tonsils and adenoids out and grommets in, as well as glue ear resolved. And you said that like her recovery was almost instantaneous. What did you notice at that time?
Oh, so I think the first thing that was probably most remarkable thing. So, you know, we met with the surgeon afterwards and, you know, he said, look, we've done all of these things, but I think she's going to have speech therapy and she's going to need, you know, we need to get her hearing checked. Anyway, she was in recovery, and then about 5 hours later, it was middle of the night, and I remember she woke up and she was starving because they, you know, made her not eat for at least 12 hours. And I whispered to my husband, I said we could give her a biscuit. And she said, as clear as a bell, biscuit. And both of us almost fell off our chair because we realized then that we hadn't heard her voice for a very long time.
Oh,
so, I know. And, you know, there was no stopping her after that. So within a month, she immediately within a week started sitting up. The vomiting stopped. She was eating, you know, like volumes. I think she was trying very much to catch up. Within about 3 months, her weight had restored, but more significantly for us, she sat up about, you know, a week into it. She was crawling, within 10 days and she was walking within 3 months. And I distinctly remember this, you know, I know I was cooking dinner and she comes into the kitchen, she crawls in. She then stands up because the music is on. I'll put music on, you know, in the evenings while I'm doing dinner just to keep them distracted. By this time I've got like a five-year-old racing around and her. And she comes in and she stands up and she doesn't just stand up. She starts dancing. So she swings. Oh, it was just the most gorgeous thing, you know. She's like just naked except for a nappy and she's just kind of having a little bit of a swing on those legs. And she knew it too. She was so proud of herself.
It was that is just precious, beautiful.
Yeah.
So how old was she when she had the surgery?
She would have been just on 18 months. Yeah.
Wow. And so she commenced crawling, like sitting up, crawling and whatnot in that window from the 18 to 24 months. Oh, my gosh, yeah. Bashy.
Yes, yes.
What a relief.
And yeah, yeah, all of that. And it turned out, you know, her hearing was really very good, so we didn't have to worry about anything other than the grommets and keeping her, you know, out of water and keeping a check on the ears so they weren't prone to infection and stuff. But, yeah, she just went from strength to strength after that. Yeah.
That is amazing.
She didn't want to leave our bed and nor did we make her. She kind of decided, you know, that she was fiercely independent and wanted to, because the kids were in the same room and she wanted to be back with her older brother, which was great actually because he was getting to the point where he probably was going to have his own room. But she managed to get 2 years out of him and they really bonded through that. It was fantastic, yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. And so like her sleep improved instantly with the surgery as well?
Instantly. So, you know, not only was she sleeping, so she did a lot of catching up. She did a lot of like, and I think we both did, to be honest, because my stress levels, you know, it took me a while to, because I was constantly checking on her through the night. You know, every time you turn, you're like, is she okay? Is she okay?
You're hypervigilant to the max.
Yeah, you are. And, you know, you just want to make sure that you don't miss a thing, like in terms of her distress or whatever it is. But funnily enough, as I said, when she was lying next to me with her mouth always half open, you know, ready to latch onto that boob, she slept well, you know, and her temperature was really well regulated. So I think even after the surgery, I just kept her with me. And then about a year, year and a half later, she sort of went, I'm moving on now. and left. Great. Yeah, except I love having them.
I bet you do. But it would have been like you probably both needed that recovery time because there would have been like in terms of night feeds and things like that, I'm imagining she still would have really benefited from that nutritional boost while she was regaining all of her strength and whatnot as well.
Absolutely. So, again, I did the same thing. I let the kids – she weaned when she was ready and she would have been about sort of three, just over three. So she got a good – 18 months from me and probably made up for all the time she, you know, threw up that breast milk. But it was, I have to say, the surgeon said this to me as well. He said, after the surgery, he said, look, I have no doubt that you continuing to breastfeed her through all of that saved her life because, as we know, the breast milk digests faster, right? The food sits there, but the breast milk just goes through and is really easily digested and would have been, you know, gone through and into her before she had a chance to throw it up. So he more or less was saying, yeah, he was also saying you kept her throat open with the breastfeeding and encouraged her to swallow. So these were all things that were essentially keeping her alive.
Oh, Bashy, that's amazing. And it's something that, like, I guess is not necessarily people would credit with it, but it makes a whole lot of sense physiologically that having her in that proximity with you, the positioning and the very nature of the breast milk, that would actually be assisting her all through that really torrid time in her life.
It was, yeah. And she, you know, she's so precious to us. And just that I feel this for moms. I feel when they, you know, your baby's sick and you're going through the system and nobody realizes the absolute personal hell you're going through, you know, where, and we do have this tendency because women are so isolated and alone, the enormous amount of pressure we put on them. So, you know, there's no community rallying around them. So when we go and seek help or get these access to services, there's an element of blame that always creeps in. You're not doing enough. You didn't do this. Why didn't you do that? This is a chart which follows a pattern of normal. You know, your baby should be at this stage. Your baby should be weaned. Your baby shouldn't be, you know, on this bottle or that bottle or this weaning cup. Honestly, we just need to get over it. I don't know. I always said to, you know, women who are like, oh, the nurse told me to, you know, get him off the bottle. And I'd say, I don't know any 18-year-old that's still on a bottle. So whatever, you know, let it go. Let it go. Don't beat yourself up over it.
It's practical or real life too, isn't it? It's like it's all the ideals in the world, but then there's real life, and it's okay to have your real life not represent whatever that bit of perfection you're supposedly meant to strive for. Not that it exists anyway.
And there's in fact, the evidence is exactly the opposite. At the first 5 years of a child's life, you love them. You know, the boundaries you set are so gentle. Basically, it's like, you know, don't clobber your little brother, you know, or, you know, maybe even like I think if you're lucky, you can convince them to sit at the table for long enough, you know, to pretend to have a meal. And even if they don't, like at least they sat at the table. You know, there's all these gentle things that you do, which is really kind of infused with love. And there's so much science now to show that that bonding period makes for healthy, stable, adjusted adults who are capable of loving, who are capable of forming their own families, who show that same love and patience and endurance to little people and little animals and their colleagues and their employees. We need a lot more of that. There's no evidence that, you know, controlling, organizing, and, you know, being authoritative over young children actually helps them. They don't learn anything except fear and aversion. That's not healthy adulthood.
It absolutely isn't. And it generally comes from a place of fear. And as we know, anything coming from a place of fear generally isn't the most healthy way to be as a human. So I think that's really wise words as well. Now, I'm curious, your little love, she obviously came well. And at what point did you welcome your third babe to the fold?
Okay, so Connor was really our surprise baby. After we had, and we, you know, our daughter Akasha was on the mend, about 6 months after that, my husband was ready. He could take a sabbatical. And I had by this time actually resigned from my job because they were harassing me while she was sick to come back to work. And I said, no, you know, there's only one thing that's really important. Your entire being becomes dedicated to supporting a sick child. And so I couldn't think of anything else, and it was fine with me at the time. So when he had this sabbatical opportunity, we decided that we would take our two little troopers, who by now were like, you know, little adventurers, and we would go on a round trip. So we went to Malaysia, we went to Thailand, we went to Hong Kong, we went to the border of China, and we came back around again. And they were amazing, you know, 3 and 6 year olds. They really were just extraordinary. And we had such a good time. And then 6 weeks after I came back, I was pregnant. So, yes.
Surprise.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
Oh, my goodness.
And Connor proved to be the greatest challenge pregnancy-wise. He, you know, throw out the rule book, and by this point I would say I vomited furiously until he was born. You know, every 45 minutes, half an hour to 45 minutes,
he was throwing up. Did you have any morning sickness with your first two babes? Because obviously this isn't just morning sickness, but did you have like a, did you think could happen?
It got progressively worse. So it was about 5 months for the first one, and then I felt amazing. It would have been about 6 to 7 months with Akasha, and then I recover and I feel amazing. But with Connor, it just never left. And so I think so by the time he was about 4.1 kilos when he was born, and
you're tiny.
I know.
Where did you put that baby?
Oh, I could barely stand up. And just to give you an idea, I never gained a kilo through the pregnancy. So he was the sum total of me. Yeah. Got to the point where the week before he was born, If I kneel down to pick up Lego or whatever it was, I had to basically crawl to the wall and use it to get myself back up again. That's what it was like. Yeah, yeah. And I was dealing with the other two by just carrying them on my back and just doing it that way. It was just...
Oh, mate. That's impressive that you were still able to get down on the floor and carry toddlers on your back when you had... Oh. Holy moly, mate. That's strong.
To be honest, I don't quite know. You just do it, though. You know, I honestly, looking back now, I think that, you know, women in Australia have children and go through and pregnancy. I think that we're superhuman, to be honest. We put up with so much. Connor, and even from the moment he was born, Connor had his own plans. He knew what he wanted and went. So he fed whenever, he slept whenever. He just did what he wanted. And even the weaning, like he, you know, he's just sitting there and I had all these plans to sort of feed him, like, you know, a spoon feeding with, like, you know, pear sauce or apple. I don't know what it was at the time. And he looked over at his brother who was eating, like, you know, some pieces of fish and a fresh salad. And he basically just reached over, gouged some of that, swallowed it whole. Because he was toothless and we were all like, oh, my God, he's got... And you know what? That was it. He just refused, you know, soft food. He just lived off that. Yeah.
It's so funny, isn't it? When they decide, yeah. Like my babes were all big eaters, but I still remember my third baby just balancing on my knee and just reaching for my plate and going, just chowing down. I can't even remember what it was on my plate, but I hadn't even factored in. Like, I think it was just mid-conversation. It's like, oh, hang on a sec. So we've started solids then.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was like. And, you know, by the next day, that all that sort of, you know, you prepare, like you're getting ready for the weaning process. And I prepared this stuff and I just looked at it and I thought, it's never going to happen. I just threw it all out.
And how much easier is it, though, when they just like eat what everyone else eats? It's so much easier.
And he was adamant, like, and even today, you know, this thing, like he's just big on salads because that's what he wanted. And, you know, the more colourful it is, the more exciting it is. And you know, I think the most fascinating thing for me is like we used to really finely slice like slivers of lamb and steak. And he only had one tooth and he'd swallow it like a lizard. And it became like this family joke. Like we'd all sit there just going, what is he? Oh, he's done it. Oh my God. You know, and it was so fascinating even to the other two. They were like, they just thought he was. Yeah, he was a force unto himself. And with him too, by this time, I just slept with him from the day he was born. You know, we carved out a space. My husband was punted to the next bed. And I just stayed with him and I wouldn't let him out of my sight. I wasn't going to take, you know, do that to any of my babies again. Never, never.
And did you think, like, did that help you with your fatigue levels and things like that? Like, how did you feel Yes. while you had him right there with you?
Well, by this time I was also very assertive as a mum. So I said to my husband, you know, for the first 6 weeks, you've got the other two and you're home. And I spent a lot of time just lying there and looking at him, you know, inspecting his toes and his fingers and he's, you know, it's really, really a great time. I fed him when he wanted to be fed and through the night he would just turn around and latch on. He just did his thing and he thrived. I mean, to be fair too, he was 4.1 kilos and I was already so, you know, skinny and so I needed the rest and I needed, you know, in order to be able to keep up with feeding him. And I needed to eat really well. And this time around, I think we were clever enough to finally do the things for me postnatally that we should have always done instead of me trying to be brave and, you know, defy the odds. Because all you're doing is borrowing from an empty vessel. It's not there. You're building a debt on your body and your physical and mental health that it's very draining. I just honestly find, and I think if we all knew just how different it was in other cultures, we probably would all just go on strike.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too. And I think it's also important because I think almost in my head, I remember hearing about some of this stuff afterwards. And I remember being so confused first time around because I'd heard of all these like things that might help you in the postpartum, but I kind of thought that's because that was the only intense time. And it's like after that, your baby sleeps and whatnot. So it's almost like I thought I could put off my recovery until he was that bit older, not realizing that actually the baby's still going to be intense. But if you get your recovery right now, you're going to be able to better cope and deal with your growing baby and their needs.
Yeah.
You'll be well with yourself.
That's it. And that's the thing. We're sold this belief that it's a race, that you just have to get from A to B, you know, and you'll be fine after that. Life will return to normal. It's not. It's a marathon. You got to pace yourself. You've got to be adequately hydrated. You know, you've got to be, you know, in the right space with the right support network. You've got to have someone along there cheering you along. Like, it's so essential for you to be able to keep going, you know, and the challenges keep presenting. Because I think you know, just when you think you've got it down pat in terms of a, you know, routine that works for them and for you, they get up and start running around and then you get even less sleep. I think I was the one who was most upset when my eldest Declan gave up his afternoon nap because I was pregnant with Akasha and all I wanted to do was have a nap. I put him in his sleeping bag and in the cot in next to me in my room, and at one point I remember just like having one eye half open, and I watched him swing himself over the cot in his sleeping bag, slide down the rungs onto the ground, and then shuffle out of my room to go and play in the backyard. Could not believe all of this in that sleeping bag.
Oh, what a legend.
Once he figured out how to do it, there was no stopping him, and I knew that was it. So much for afternoon naps. Forget it. Yeah.
Done. Done with cot also. Cot, yep. Gone. Well,
exactly. Oh, my gosh. It's over. Yeah.
That is so funny. I definitely grieved the end of naps. Like it was like something I had to let go. Like it usually made bedtime heaps easier. So, you know, there is a bit of a trade-off. But yeah. Holy dooly, when you first realize that actually that doesn't happen forever, it hurts.
Yeah. Boy, does it hurt, right?
Especially when you're pregnant. You're pregnant, it's a killer.
I so look forward. I remember I'd give him lunch and I'd be so looking forward to that little kip. Yeah, no, it went.
Nah. Well, that's all. We had to introduce the quiet time, and usually it involved a movie because then I was able to just lay still.
Yeah.
And, you know, it depended on the attention span and age and whatnot. But, you know, even if I got 15 minutes of sitting with my legs up, I needed it. I needed to have that quiet downtime. I couldn't keep going at toddler pace without that break.
Yeah. Oh, I remember, this is a good story actually. So I had to do this napping thing with Connor because by the time I was 8 months into the pregnancy, I was so unwell. I was really like, you know, running out of energy. One day, same thing, I put a movie on and the two of them were sitting there. So I had Declan at the end, he would have been like five. So just before school, and Akasha was sitting on me and she was about 2.5. And I must have dozed off because when I woke up, they both had Sharpies, and they had drawn pictures and flowers all over one side of me that, you know, they could get to because they were sitting on top of me. So they just kind of walked. And I got up and I think my husband came home and I didn't realize it. You know, it was all down here, down my neck. And he was like, "What happened to you?" And I said, what do you mean? And he said, "You're covered in drawings. Like you just, and it didn't go away for a couple of weeks."
Because it was a Sharpie. That's permanent marker for anyone listening along.
Yeah. They weren't allowed to.
No, so they didn't find themselves some washable markers. They went and found the Sharpies of all things. Oh, Bashy, that's awesome.
Raided the telephone drawer, you know, and just drew stuff all over. And Akasha, you know, she was doing butterflies and flowers. And
the level of passed out you must have been, not even feel it. I love it. That is so good. Mummy really needed a nap.
That's it. So, and you know, after that, I was so resigned to it. I remember, like, you know, going to the shops and people just looking at me with, you know, these drawings coming down my face. And what can you do?
It eventually came off.
It eventually.
Like, hey, what? Have I got something on my face? Oh, that's awesome. I love it so much. Now, I'm just thinking, one thing I haven't really asked you about is, were your babes contact nappers during the day? Did you tend to have cuddles to sleep, or were they more of independent sleepers during the day?
No, always a bit of a snuggle before sleep. And depending on, like, I was pretty good at anticipating, like, the tiredness, after a while, I should say, like, you know, took at least 6 months, but you shouldn't underestimate that quiet time in a dim room, because it does actually wind them down, and you holding them winds them down more. So a bit of singing, you know, and a bit of bouncing around, a bit of rocking, but also part of the ritual of going in there. So I used to go in there humming and singing, and I'd say, oh, let's make this room really nice and cool and dark. You draw the curtains and you're still chatting and stuff like that. And so that was actually not hard to do at all, because they're quite tired in the afternoons. The nighttime I found a bit harder, even though we did the whole bath and settled down. They love their book reading so much that it'll be like another one, yeah, another one, you know. So we're like, five books today, mummy. And I'll be like, no, three, four. No, three, four. That would, and eventually, of course, I'd do four, because, yeah, you, yeah, know,
like, books, right, you know.
Yeah, no, and they're always, you know, good fun. I have to admit, I secretly love those books we had, but they loved it too. So we used to sit there together and do a lot of reading.
That's, yeah, beautiful. And so, yeah, as your babes got older, just for people listening along, how did bedtime shift and change? Like, do you still stay with your babes while they're going to sleep, or do they prefer that you leave now, or how does that look as they got older?
So by the time they're about 8 or 9, they were happy with like a kiss and a hug and a cuddle. But bear in mind that we read to all of our kids, and we still read to our 10-year-old until they're ready, like it's bedtime. So we would get climb into bed with them half an hour before, you know, the usual bedtime, and read. So it's part of the ritual. It's essential part of the ritual as far as they're concerned. And I think about 10 years of age, maybe even 11 for my daughter, because she loved the reading so much. Our eldest, he started doing his own reading, and that was sort of, you know, his thing. So we put him to bed, and he said, I want to read by myself for half an hour. So, but that, even that, he was probably about year 6, and he was kind of getting more aware of the fact that, you know, we were like, because we were also doing both of them. So he let it go faster. Akasha didn't really want to let it go till she got to year 6 as well. And with Connor, I don't know that, yeah, I think it'll be at least another couple of years before he's ready to give that up too. There's about an age where they sort of go, I want to do my own reading. So then it's like a hug. We still, I have to say, even with our 16-year-old who's actually just turned 17, bedtime involves like a little chat. Like I sit there and just check in with them. So it's like, how are you going? You know, do you have a good day? Or sometimes I just go in there and give them a hug and good night, and they will start a conversation. And I can't tell you how important that is. It's like they've been, you know, worrying about something or thinking about something all day, and then it's their last opportunity. And this is the other thing that we underestimate, which is that, you know, that witching hour and unsettled period that they have before bedtime as children, it actually hits them again as teenagers. So, you know, they do. They like to sleep in, but they also like get quite kind of active at about, you know, 8:30 at night. So it's a great time to sit and chat. A really good time. One, it'll be some question that will be thrown at you, you know, like you know, something about they've heard at school, some kids in trouble because, you know, they were caught with drugs in their pockets. What would we do in those situations? really important conversations to have and to be ready for them. So I do that. And then I'm still very hands on. I don't care if they don't want it. They get big hugs and kisses from me randomly, randomly through the day. Yeah.
Just demonstrating that love. I love the idea of that, especially I think that's like, you know, for people with their tiny babes at the moment, knowing that they're laying the groundwork for those kind of conversations and openness in the relationship with their parent right from infancy, because you've been available for that all their lives.
And that skin contact, don't ever let it go. Just always be normalized about it, you know. Just a random, you're walking past, reach over and give them a hug. My eldest is 5'10" now, and I am literally hugging him around his waist. I don't care.
I was going to say, you'd be up to his belly button.
Absolutely. And you know what? Now, you know, he loves it. Like he just, I'll say, hey, no, morning, darling, or whatever, have a good day. And he'll say, I love you, Mom, and, you know, put his big arms around me. It's just gorgeous. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Honestly, that really warms my heart because, you know, that you can see how quickly they grow. Mine are 7, nearly 6 and 3. And like, I can just see already like the babiness is leaving them, but I just always hope that they still feel like they can have that connection with me. So I love hearing that you've got that with your big little people now.
Yeah. And you know what? Never, like, even though they do this whole, I'm, you know, independent, you find ways. I mean, I think the book reading and the evenings and the chatting is, you know, but just also random sort of, you know, so it doesn't get in their way and it's not too intensive. You're just walking past and you go, I'll sometimes say, I kiss you, and I'll just give them a kiss on the cheek.
Just keeping your connection going regardless.
That's it.
That's beautiful. Well, we're nearly up to our 30 minutes again, and so I'm wondering if you would have one more tip that you'd like to share with our listeners.
So I think if there's one thing that got us through all of the ups and downs of, you know, raising our babies, it is that I always look at them through the lens of love, always. So, you know, no matter how many tantrums we've been through, it's my job. I'm the one who has to forgive unconditionally. I'm the one who has to always look at them and give them that benefit of the doubt the rest of the world will never give them. It's my job, and I take it very seriously, and that would be my advice, is always look at your children through the lens of love.
Oh, Bashi, that is just perfect. And thank you so much for being an amazing guest and sharing your experience with your family and your three very unique little people and the dramas that you all went through to find your feet with your family. So thanks again for coming on the show, Bashi.
It's an absolute pleasure, Carly. Loved it.
Thank you. And I'll be sure to drop all of the links to Bashi's work that she does on human rights in childbirth, the International Lawyers Network, and also her law firm, BW Law, into our show notes and the Facebook page links as well, in case anybody wanted to get in contact with her. Thanks for your work in that area also, Bashi. It's hugely needed in the community, and we appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Absolute pleasure. Take care.
I really hope you enjoyed the podcast today. The information we discussed was just that, information only. It is not specific advice. If you take any action following something you've heard from our show today, it is important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that advice be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or any other advice. Please reach out to me if you do have any questions or if there's a topic you'd really like us to be covering. And if you know somebody who'd really benefit from listening to our podcast, please be sure to pass our name along. Also, check out our free peer support group, the Beyond Sleep Training Project, and our wonderful website, www.littlesparklers.org. If you'd like even more from the show, you can join us as a patron on Patreon, and you can find a link for that in our show notes. If listening's not really your jam, we also make sure we put full episode transcripts on our Little Sparklers website for you to also enjoy, and fully captioned YouTube videos as well on our Little Sparklers channel. So thanks again for listening today. We really enjoy bringing this podcast to you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50,
luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.